Hello, welcome to the next episode of the ChangeT podcast. This is going to be like the last regular episode of 2022, sort of, because next week we only have to do the recapping, no previewing. This time we still get to talk about four events, preview another two, but we're going to start with something else. There's been a retirement announcement, sort of, right?
Of sorts, yes. So during the Slovak Tennis Player of the Year awards, Lukáš Lacko has announced that he is more or less done with tennis. He said that he will most likely play some league matches and some exhibitions next season. But with his ranking where it's at, he doesn't feel like he can really compete anymore. He's been struggling with a shoulder injury for like the past year, pretty much the whole season. It was plaguing him. It prevented him from really ramping up into a full preparation. And then that resulted in him playing very few matches. So he is pretty much done. He hinted that he will most likely go into coaching to try and pass on some of his great experience. Of course, he is a very experienced player, made top 50 back in 2013, made two finals on the ATP Tour back in Zagreb 2012 and then Eastbourne 2018, 14 challenger titles. How will you remember Lukáš Lacko?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, that's the case for most people. I mean, the recent memories we have with Lukáš Lacko are just him, you know, losing in every first round, barely moving on the court, which obviously wasn't the case back in the day, but he was always so dangerous whenever the court was fast, slick, grass, indoor hard courts, carpet. That was what he loved, of course. 14 challenger titles, which is pretty crazy. You know, won his first one in 2007, his last one in 2021, that Mallorca run last year that came completely out of nowhere. Even two ATP Tour finals, which honestly, if you've only been watching tennis for like the past 5 years or so, might really catch you off guard. One of them was in 2018, though. But still, you know, Lacko hasn't really been maybe producing these results consistently, but you know, he was at some point a top 50 player, like a very decent top 50 guy. So surely that's definitely a memorable character. Earlier in the year, I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or not, but I remember hearing from another player that who simply talked to him that Lacko is now training like three times a week only. So it makes sense that he's retiring, that he, you know, he was just playing his last tournaments or next to last, because as you said, it's not definitive. But I think when we saw that he didn't even play qualies in Bratislava or something like that was a big tell that perhaps something isn't right with his health as well, because that seemed like just the perfect event for him to say goodbye in. And just glancing at his records right now, I have to say that he made the US Open first round 9 years in a row and lost first round every time. I wonder if that's like some sort of a record, because I don't think I've ever seen this, you know, just when you have these Grand Slam results on Wikipedia and there's round one and nine consecutive seasons in the brackets. I don't think I've ever seen this.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was a record. He did have a couple of nice runs at other slams.
Yeah, Australia, Wimbledon, yeah, sure.
But yeah, US Open, it doesn't seem like it was his bag at all. Just nice straight first round. That's pretty wild. I actually didn't realize that he held that streak. But yeah, for a long time, he was a player who sort of hung on at the main tour level. And then played a lot of sort of Asian challengers during the clay season, because he always hated clay. He was already long clay. So this player who was in between the two tours for, I would say, most of his career. It's a shame that he's not going to be a presence anymore.
Yeah, right. And you also have a lot of memories from watching him live, right? In Bratislava.
Yeah, I've watched him live many, many times. It was one of my first matches that I watched live was the 2011 Slovak Open final, where he defeated Berankis. And then, of course, watched him when I was a ball kid there, and just and overall it was an interesting experience.
Yeah, I think I watched him live once, although it could have been more. Definitely in Ostrava this year, but well, you know, Laszko on clay in 2022, that wasn't really a pleasant sight, so it was a bit funny. He lost to Furness 1-6, 1-6. Of course, even Furness ended up winning the title, so in hindsight, it definitely doesn't look as bad as it did. When I watched him on the third court, where just like, you know, three people could watch behind the fence, so it was a quite an experience for, you know, watching a guy who was once in the top 50. Other than that, probably not. But I'm assuming that, you know, he can still play league tennis or something. This year he played in the Polish league a lot, so there is for sure a possibility that I will catch some Lukasz Laszko match in the future.
Yeah, and I think with that we can move on to actual challenger tennis that we have. We should start in Temuco, probably. That was the biggest event, and definitely I would say most likely the most shocking winner, with Guido Andreozzi coming out of qualifying to defeat Nicolas Kicker in the final. I believe he now becomes the lowest ranked challenger titleist champion. Yeah,
actually, I think there is an error on the ATP website, on the media guide or wherever, because it says that since the year 2000, I think the official stat is there. I'm not sure what happened before the year 2000, but their Stryker was the record holder, and yesterday, yeah. I saw it on Twitter that someone said he was the Andreozzi was the lowest ranked player to win a challenger title since Guillermo Canas in 2006, and I did I checked it, and apparently Canas was unranked when he won Belém in 2006. Think Canas had like a ban or something like that, didn't he? Like maybe a doping suspension or something like that. I don't want to, you know. Sure, I'm checking it now because I don't want to. Yeah, he had a doping ban, and he wasn't playing for over a year. And yeah, and he was actually acquitted of deliberate performance enhancement, but still, you know, he missed some time because of. Yeah, he was just considered careless in not checking the medicine. So he wasn't doping, but, you know, he still got a suspension, and he came back after over a year and instantly won a challenger in Belém. So he was actually unranked in 2006 when he won a challenger. So at least since the year 2000, Andreozzi is the second lowest ranked winner at 901. Yeah.
Yeah, he was number 901 in the rankings coming into it. His first title since November 2018 in singles, that is. I think this was only his fifth professional singles event that he played. He played some Bundesliga or something.
Yeah, this year, yeah.
But he won seven doubles titles on the Challenger Tour. So he was essentially just a Challenger doubles specialist going into this. But he started in qualifying, defeated Fernandez Moreno, defeated Alves as well. Then in the main draw, he started with a couple of very strong wins over Mena, 6-2 in the third, Tirante, 6-4 in the third, defeated Otegi, 6-1, 6-1. Then the win that I think impressed me the most, he defeated Emilio Gomez from 3-6, 3-5 down to win 6-1 in the third, which is pretty wild. Moves up 506 spots in the rankings to number 395. What did you think of Andreozzi and this wild run?
I've got him at 396, but that doesn't really matter, I guess. Of course, we knew he can play. Even when he played these challengers earlier in the year, he looked pretty competitive, especially I'm talking about the June ones where he came back. And I don't think either of us expected him to go that route, just playing doubles. Of course, he was absolutely excellent. He's been absolutely excellent because he also won in Temuco with Turan. I guess in that sense, maybe it makes sense, but still, to win seven matches in a row, also beats the, you know, some of the most dangerous title contenders, especially Gomez, but even Kicker, Tirante, Mena. These are all guys whom, you know, if we were to name like the top 10 contenders for Temuco, we probably would have to go with all of them. So that was pretty insane. I'm assuming that this will result in him playing a more singles-oriented schedule again in 2023 because he's shown us, but more importantly, he's also shown himself that he can still play this. As you said, the Gomez win is probably key. Of course, that was like the main favorite for the title, but you know. It does fall a bit on Gomez probably, especially mentally after losing that game, you know, where Gomez was 5-4 up serving for the match, 15 love up, and then he was a mess since then. But you know, still a huge run for Andreozzi. As I said, of course we know he can do it, but that the fact just you know, coming out of just playing pretty much playing doubles most of the year and winning 7 matches in a row against, you know, if we're looking at the draw in Temuco, of course it was poor, of course there were just only clay specialists on hard courts most of the time, but Andreozzi got like almost the worst of it, and of course he's not a hard court player either. He had a couple of decent runs on hard courts in the past, but you know, just his second pro title, and the only other one was an ITF in 2011. So that's how huge it is.
Yeah, very, very impressive. As for Nicolas Kicker, it was his 11th challenger final, third one this season. On his run, he defeated Nicolas Alvarez, João Reis da Silva, Facundo Bagni, 6-love, 6-2. Don't know what happened there. And then beat Mejia in the semis before losing to Andreozzi. Moves at 20 spots, number 181. Any thoughts on Kicker here?
Yeah, Bagnis was an absolute, like, I don't think I've ever seen a Bagnis performance like that, honestly. Kicker didn't need to do much to win that match. But Kicker seems to have improved on hard courts since his comeback. I don't know if he may be trained on these courts in the meantime. I think it's probably possible, but in 2021, he won a couple of 25Ks on hard courts, despite at that point having like 15 matches and 33% win rate on hard courts, you know, in his career prior to his match fixing suspension. It shows definitely. I don't think he's going to do it in any bigger events, but you know, last year we had this one-off event on hard in South America and Rio. He made the semis. Here again, he just shows that out of all the clay specialist crowd, he can definitely stand out. I don't think he really translates his game that much. He just sort of plays consistent tennis, and it's enough for most of these guys. You know, could have won the final up until like 6-4, 1-1. It was a very even match, but he never really had a chance after getting broken in the second set.
Yeah, we can move on to our semifinalists. Emilio Gomez beat Paz, Farriat, and Olivo 6-2 in the third, his 8th challenger semifinal this season. You feel like he could have done better in his semi against Andreozzi for sure, right?
Yeah, this is a loss he can't afford, really. I mean, he's at 107 in the live rankings right now. I'm not sure that has any chance of changing for the next edition of the ATP rankings, which will determine Australian Open main draw list. And yeah, if he beat Andreozzi, he would have had like been like almost guaranteed, even if there are many, even if many PRs are coming. And right now it's going to be like, you know, it's going to come down to basically luck, whether he gets in or not. So he really shot himself in the foot there. And that's really all you can say about Gomez here. He wasn't playing well, I don't think, at any real point of the week. His hot streak that he had in the summer is probably gone. But, you know, still, this is an event you expect him to win. You expect him to beat all these guys. And well, Andreozzi, of course, is a quality opponent if he can, you know, play. He was in the top 100 as well. So if he like lost to Andreozzi in usual fashion, you know, just 6-4, 6-4, whatever, I don't think he would have been really too bummed. But, you know, having the chance to serve for the match, 1 point up in that game as well, I think that really needs to hurt. And yeah, we'll see if he gets into the Australian Open, because it's not going to be clear.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what happens with Gomez now, he will forever be a top 100 player. Our other semifinalist was Nicolas Mejia, who defeated Buruchaga 6-3, 6-1, Locke 6-4, 6-3, and then Duga, my pick, Nick Hart 6-4 in the third. Any thoughts on Mejia here?
Yeah, he's also one of the better hardcourters in the draw, right? I mean, he actually plays on it like more or less the same as on clay. Even recently, we saw him, featuring in American hardcourt events, not doing much there, like at all. But, you know, still, it shows what his priorities are. I think in recent, looking at it in like the past few months, he's mostly played South America when it was on altitude, which is kind of interesting because Mejia doesn't really strike me as that good a player on altitude, I guess. But yeah, even last year he had that Salinas final, right? Orlando final. So that's actually, hard courts is where he had his best runs in his pro career so far. So that's not quite, not that surprising that he made it to the semis. Beat Hart and Locke, which, both are very competent hard courters as well, especially Hart, whom you picked, yeah.
Yeah, and as we mentioned over in the doubles, Andreozzi and Duran lifted the title once again, their seventh of the season. This time they defeated Martinez and Nedumčeťjan. We can move over to Valencia, which was the second biggest event, I believe, as a challenger at 90, where we had Oleksiy Krutich lift the title, defeating Luka van Asch 6-2, 6-love in the final. For Krutich, his second challenger title after winning Prague earlier this season. I think that was a 50, though. So it's, bigger by a lot, this title. Interesting run. He started with a 6-4 in the third win over Bonadio, took out Darderi in straight sets, came back from a sit-down against Pellegrino, and then again against Milojevic to beat him 7-5 in the third. The final was much easier, though, just the two games. He gets to move up 62 spots in the rankings, number 190, breaking the top 200. What did you think of Krutich this week, and how big was this week for him moving forward?
Pretty huge when you look at what he was doing since that Prague run. Because I think he only won one main draw match on the Challenger Tour, got through some qualifying, but other than that, not really doing much. Of course, some of that was indoor hard courts. That's not his best, but also on clay, he had a streak of losses. Krumich, Lenz, not something we would expect from him probably most of the time. And this was pretty huge, tough matches as well. Milojevic, Pellegrino, Bonadio, all in third sets. I'm not saying it's super shocking, but perhaps after the run that he had of late, that is just a bit unexpected. But of course, the guy can play. We've talked about his game many times. And the demolition against Van Asch, I would give credit to Krutich at the same time, saying that Van Asch just didn't really give him any chance to lose that match. But yeah, Krutich definitely made sure that there's like no comeback attempt at all. Very cleanly winning all the rallies. He's got this pretty great baseline game. It's not super powerful, but definitely has enough pop to dictate. And just blasted returns of Van Asch's serve, which more players should be able to do. But along the way, at least no one really did that against the Frenchman. And Krutich just stood a bit far back and hit huge balls of anything that was coming at him. And it was way more than enough in the 58-minute final, I believe, which was a bit of a bummer. I mean, I was expecting a good fight there.
Yeah, as for Van Asch, it was his third Challenger final. All of them have happened in the past 2 months with Lisbon and Brest. Previously there, he didn't really look up to much in the final either, but it was against stronger opposition with Cecchinato in Lisbon and Barrère in Brest. This was the first. He was actually a pretty strong favorite going to this one, and ended up winning just two games, though. On his run here, he got a couple of retirements to start from Koyarini at 2-love in the second set, from Carbajas Baena at 1-1 in the second set. That was my pick. Your pick with Drew before we even started was Apatalias. So this wasn't our event when it came to picking winners. Then he defeated Banco Cusano and took out Yamas Ruiz, 6-2 in the third. He still gets to move about 24 spots in the rankings, number 176. What did you think of Van Asch on this run?
Yeah, pretty funky path with these two retirements. Baranko Kosano was also injured when they played. But I think there's still some positives coming out of this week for Van Aert. He is showing a lot more just willingness to attack, close the net. It definitely isn't like, you know, his natural style. He is he tends to go away from it in the key moments, which is only fair because it's not what he feels most comfortable in. But yeah, it has to be said that he has made some enormous progress in the past few months. Of course, he's now made 3 Challenger finals in like 2 months, which is a pretty crazy achievement. But this is the first championship match he will actually regret, because, you know, Barrère, Cecchinato, especially on their like respective best surfaces. Barrère in indoor hard courts in France, because not even indoor hard courts, it's indoor hard courts in France where he's best, and Cecchinato on clay. That was something that, you know, he can't really have any regrets about. You know, that's, you know, the guys were just too good on the day, especially. And yeah, and Krutek losing to Krutek in such fashion is definitely the first one that Van Aert really, you know, just screwed up something in, because yeah, the other two weren't really any sort of an disappointment for him or something. I wonder if that's, you know, if that was also related to some mental block or something. He definitely was just fully out of sorts in the final. It had absolutely no chance of winning this one. Lost the last 10 games of the match.
Yeah, we can move on to our semifinalists, starting with Pablo Llamas Ruiz, who began in qualifying with a 7-5 in the third win over Kenidas Heper, then got a retirement in the third set from Esteve Lobato. In the main draw, he defeated Alvarez Varona, Zekic, and Lopez Mondragut to reach his first career Challenger semifinal. Was also a setup on Van Aert. Any thoughts on Llamas Ruiz here?
Yeah, weird player. I honestly don't. I'm totally not sure what to think of him. And it was the same in Braga, really. The guy, I don't know. Sometimes he just comes out and plays these shots. They have no pop on them. They have such long back swings, and it's hard to imagine why he's successful. And then against Van Aert, he actually played some insane tennis. Was blasting the ball. I don't know. Since Braga, he only had a couple of ITFs, made second round in both, but actually lost to some very decent players, Droguet and Lopez San Martin. I think both won 3 ITF titles this year. So definitely not, you know, for that level, they weren't any bad losses or whatever. And here, maybe perhaps not the toughest road to victory. Alvarez Varona seemed very exhausted after coming over from the States. But still, against Van Aert especially, I think he played just, if he was able to maintain that level of intensity physically, maybe he could have won it. But that was definitely the best performance from him that I've seen so far, and very excited to see what he does with it, because honestly, the runs have been, you know, they both have felt pretty random. Like, he could have easily lost in qualifying in both Valencia and Braga, and yet he made a quarterfinal, then a semifinal.
Yeah, our other semifinalist was the experienced Milojevic, reaching a second Challenger semifinal of the season, beating Merida Aguilar, Sanchez Izquierdo, and Andreev in a wild match of love 6-6-4-6-4. 6-4. What did you think of Milojevic here?
Yeah, pretty crazy that it's just his second semifinal of the season, but that's how much he's fallen this year, right? And other than the Blois final, he hasn't had much to offer. In fact, other than the Blois final, he only had 2 other quarterfinals, Lima and a main tour one in Cordoba, which is crazy, but he got in as a lucky loser into the second round, beat Echeverri, and then lost to Londero. Londero was in the main tour semi. Jesus, that Cordoba event was weird. Anyway, he snuck into Australian Open qualies. I mean, it's still unclear. He still has Maya, so maybe he can make up some ground there as well. But that's what he's fighting for right now, which, you know, considering where he was even at the beginning of the season, I think he even made it through the qualifying at the Australian Open. So yeah, comparing that, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he definitely has a lot to make up for, because this season has been horrible for him for most of it. Over in the doubles, Krutich emulated Andreozzi and got the double here, alongside Roca Bataia, defeating the Sabanov brothers, for whom it was the sixth final overall. One of them was an ATP final in Houston this season for the Sabanov brothers. But yeah, Krutich and Roca Bataia, the champions in Valencia. We can head over to Andrea, where we had Leandro Riedi defeat Michal Kukushkin to win his second challenger title, back-to-back titles after last week, 12 straight wins since he won the last one out of qualifying. On his run this week, he defeated Hugo Gaston in two tiebreaks to start, then took out Hase, Karlovski, Sachko before defeating Kukushkin in the final. Gets to move of 36 spots, number 161 in the rankings. What did you think of Riedi this week?
Yeah, pretty much you could just, you know, play what I said last time, I think, and it would still hold true. I would say he was even more, less up and down this week, you know, especially not losing a set, winning three tiebreaks against Kukushkin and Gaston. Drawing Hugo Gaston after winning a challenger title, that seemed tough, but he, despite, I think, struggling a bit more in the actual sets, he won both tiebreaks, really ramped up the pace there. Yeah, he just can't really, can't miss at this point. He was, he has a very inconsistent approach to the game, and yet he keeps hitting his combinations with such perfect execution. What can you really say? This is a fantastic breakthrough run. We'll see if he can do it on other surfaces, because again, that's like last week, that's a big question, whether he can actually translate that to any court that's not indoors. Because so far in his pro career, he hasn't done it. And when you look at how he plays tennis, it makes a lot of sense. He really needs that sort of, you know, perfect conditions, not hampered by anything, to execute it, it seems at least. But if he can somehow take that form, take that confidence to a slower surface, still be successful, then I think that would raise his ceiling massively, and this could be a really, you know, a breakthrough of a star. Then 277 in the rankings 2 weeks ago, and now he's at 161. So he was very far off Australian Open qualifying before Helsinki, and now he's gonna be in the top 200 basically until next year, at least for the next 12 months. He's probably gonna be, you know, in that Grand Slam qualifying range, because he doesn't really have that much to defend throughout the year, right? Other than Lugano, of course, the final in April.
Yeah, so these 2 weeks account for 160 of his 360 points that he has in the rankings.
Exactly, so, yeah.
Huge for him. Our finalist was Mikhail Kukushkin in his 23rd Challenger final, his first one since March 2019 in Phoenix. This week, he beat Poljak and Hertz before taking out our picks, your pick Rodionov first, and then my pick Fucsovics. All in straight sets coming into the final. He gets to move up 31 spots, number 192. What did you think of Kukushkin this week?
Yeah, probably his best run of the year, right? Has to be. It turns out that on an indoor court, you know, when he can play on a sleek surface, he's still super dangerous. Especially the match against Hertz, I think it was, where it just seemed like the Belgian was never getting any ball inside his comfort zone, inside his hitting zone. You have to play off these lower bounces, and it's a nightmare. He also has a 4-0 head-to-head against Fucsovics now, interestingly. So then there could be something in there as well. Most of these matches were, of course, back in the day. One of them was a third set tiebreaker, but the other three were straight set victories. Maybe that explains the win a bit. And certainly along with Helsinki, the quarterfinal he made last week from the qualifying, it feels like the strongest patch of play that Kukushkin has had all year. Although probably, you know, some of that is recency bias, because I think at the beginning of the year he also wasn't really playing poorly or anything, but that's
he did okay. He had a nice run to the Australian Open main draw, Wimbledon main draw, but this is definitely the most consistent play that he's had when I look at his results this season. Sure.
And it's great to see, because, you know, sometimes we forget how good these players are. And yeah, turns out that if you throw in Kukushkin on an indoor hard court on grass, as we had earlier this year, even at this stage of his career, he's just going to be a nightmare to play.
As for semifinalists, we mentioned him. Martin Fucsovics was one of them, beating Fils, Peniston, and Travalia 7-5 in the third, but ultimately losing to Kukushkin, ending his 8-win streak. Any thoughts on Fucsovics here?
Yeah, that was no Bratislava in terms of his level. He had massive issues closing out every single match. I'm talking about the first three, because the fourth one, he couldn't really, you know, he didn't have a chance at closing it out. And definitely wasn't as good as in Bratislava. Maybe it's also, you know, like for many players of late, we saw that when they secure that top 100 spot, when they secure the Austrian Open, they sort of tend to dip in motivation. Mike Schag, Zhijin Zhang, I think as well. We've seen it for a lot of players, and I don't think Fucsovics was ever playing as well as in Bratislava here. It was more the Fucsovics from the Pokorny match than anything else.
Yeah, still, I mean, pretty huge when it comes to the rankings. It solidifies him within the top 100 up to 87. So even those 30 points moved him up 11 spots, which I'm sure that he's, I don't know about satisfied, because it was a pretty disappointing loss. But, you know, he got what he needed, I think, out of this week. We also had a more surprising semifinalist in Vitaly Sachko, who defeated Lazarov from a set down, got a retirement from Yellow Cells after just three games. Took out Tomáš Machač after Machač secured a top 100 debut, I think.
Yep.
He's a number 98, so yeah, Machač sort of got it and then dipped. His first challenger semifinal this season. What are your thoughts on Sachko here?
I think, as it turns out, even Machač's win over Koboli would have been enough, so he didn't even need the Stina walkover. But yeah, Sachko, of course, made two challenger finals last year. I still think that, you know, there's gonna be more coming. I think it's just probably too good to for them not to over the course of his career. But yeah, it hasn't been a great season, definitely not. Three quarterfinals, if I'm counting right, before this. So his best run of the year, and yeah, of course he's a capable player, especially when his returning style pays off, because he just takes everything big. And yeah, big win over Machač for him, but Riedi was just too good this fortnight, and yeah, can't really blame him for that loss, of course. And is he, he would have to like win Maya probably to make Australian Open qualies, so it's next to impossible.
Yeah, I think he's 280, which is still pretty good. I think he was outside the top 300 coming into this event. So yeah, there definitely some big points for him here.
And he's dropping some points as well. So yeah, only a title in Maya would be enough for him.
Over in the doubles, we have Cash and Patton win once again, the number one team on the Challenger circuit this season, their ninth Challenger title, this time beating Forti and Serafini.
Yeah, and I have to say that this is a record, you know, for most Challenger doubles titles in a single season as a pair. It was actually a record already, but they were like holding a joint with Sanjay and Sonjad Ratiwatana, of course, from 2012 with 8 titles. And now at 9, it is a record as a pair in a single season. And they are still playing Maya, I think, or at least were signed up. Are they? Yeah, they are playing Maya. They're a little crazy, honestly. Like, it doesn't even improve their ranking that much, but you know, why not? if they're feeling all right. They've already played 71 matches as a pair this season, and are 61-10 with 9 challenger titles, 13 titles as a whole, because it's been they've also won 4 ITF 25Ks, and they only started playing together in April, so until April they're not defending like next to anything. They actually are on like similar ranking spots, I think, as Glasspool and Heliovara were finishing their 2021 season, which would be very funny if Cash and Patton were also able to make the ATP finals the year after. But, you know, of course it's a long shot, but we still expect that they will do something on the major next year, that it's definitely going to be some sort of a breakthrough, even if maybe not as huge as for Lloyd and Harry. Or, I mean, Would it really shock you? I don't know.
It's possible. I was about to say this. I feel like they could sort of emulate Glasspool and Heliobara.
Yeah.
Obviously, the main is different. But ultimately, with the format that doubles play is no add, third set tiebreaker, it's a bit of a crapshoot. It's also about luck and
yep.
putting yourself in a situation to succeed. But they've definitely put themselves in a situation to succeed. Both ranked inside the top 80 now. I'm really excited to see how they sort of stack up against main tour opposition.
Yeah, doubles 250s tend to have some completely random finalists or winners from time to time. And like it would be very surprising for me if Kashan Patten didn't threaten at least to win an ATP title next year. Because, you know, all 250s, sometimes you just get players like, I don't know, two random singles pairing up. And yeah, as you said, Noah scoring four matches, super tiebreakers. The same on the Challenger Tour, right? Even on the Challenger Tour, you know, this week we had 40 and Serafini in the final and actually taking a set of Cash Patten.
Yeah, we can move over to Yokkaichi, where we had a bit of a deja vu in the final. Yosuke Watanuki over Frederico Ferreira Silva, just like last week. This time, much less competitive, 6-2, 6-2 for Watanuki, much more dominant. His third challenger title, first one outside of Kobe. Obviously, last week we had the fun stat of 60% of his finals were in Kobe. Now it's down to just 50. But back-to-back titles either way for Watanuki, huge, without dropping a set here. Started with beating Kolač, then got a late retirement 4-1 in the second set against Zhukaev. Yun Seong Chung then retired 2-6, 2-5 down. So two very late retirements there. Beat Duckworth in straight sets as well. Up 28 spots, number 145. What did you think about Tanuki this week?
Yeah, of course, you can very easily just, you know, come in and say that, you know, he's doing it in Japanese challengers, that the competition is much weaker. Yes, but then again, he scored a number of quality wins in the Japanese swing. Mostly, of course, talking of O'Connell, of Duckworth, but even the other guys he's beaten. Definitely a more talented player than what he's been showing most of 2022. But still, you know, to get on this sort of run, 13-2 in Japan, I think 14-2, right? Yeah, 14-2 with only that O'Connell lost in the final at Yokohama and lost to Jason Chung in Matsuyama, but that was, you know, coming off a final. Now he's won two weeks in a row and no sets lost even. Plays such, even though it wasn't indoors, he was able to just keep playing. That's balls to the wall, ultra aggressive tennis, and yeah, just destroyed Ferreira Silva in the final this time. Constantly rushed the ground strokes, didn't allow him for anything, and yeah, it worked out even better for him than in Kobe, which was supposed to be like his event, right? And now I guess we need to accept Watanuki as not only a Kobe specialist, and yeah, it makes total sense. I would love to see him do it in European challengers as well. You know, have some sort of a top 100 push, because he definitely has a very fun game.
Yeah, and he moves into his new career high ranking. As I said, it's 145, and it's already his best win tally of his career, 40 wins that he's gotten this season. As for our finalist, Frederico Ferreira Silva, it was for him, of course, back-to-back finals. Third challenger final of his career without any titles. His run was, I would say, easier, but struggled more as well compared to Watanuki, when three sets with Su, three sets with Mochizuki, three sets with Sinclair in the quarterfinals. Beat Uchida, though, in straight sets, 6-2, 6-2. Moves up 40 spots, number 204 in the rankings. What did you think of Ferreira Silva here?
Yeah, third final. Of course, he played Watanuki again. This time got completely demolished, but you know, the conditions are much more natural for Watanuki, so I don't think he can really be super disappointed about it, especially as he's secured his place in the Australian Open qualifying, which was probably why he played the Japanese swing in the first place. Turned out to be a great decision. I hope he will get that challenger title at some point, but I wouldn't even say against Watanuki he had his chances, because because in the last two sets he was like not doing much on return. Yesterday, I think, compared to when we were recording this, he just got blown off the court. not much he could do there, but definitely huge for him ranking wise. And as you said, the draw was significantly easier, but it makes sense that it was more eventful for him because, well, he's not, it's pretty hard to say actually where he plays his best. He is good both on hard courts and clay courts, but probably likes it when it's slightly slower than it was in Yokkaichi this week.
Yeah, as for semifinalists, we had Kaichi Uchida, who defeated Kunin Shvaran in 6-3 in the third, beat Hazawa, beat Shimabukuro 7-5 in the third for his second challenger semifinal of the season. Any thoughts?
That's just his second semifinal of the season. That's pretty interesting. Yeah, so other than the Oeiras title, he hasn't done much, apparently. But yeah, 160 in the rankings, Kaichi Uchida, that's still pretty weird, but soon enough he's gonna drop the points from Rio de Janeiro, right? In December, so that will be a pretty big hit. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think I ever considered Uchida a threat to win this title. Just in recent weeks, he hasn't really done that much, even though there were some good moments for sure. Like the quarterfinals losses to Wu and Watanuki, of course, both players who are in form. In these events. And yeah, I was definitely surprised to see him lose just, you know, 6-2, 6-2 to Ferreira Silva, because it seemed that if someone will, well, actually in both matches, there was a very big chance that we won't get that Watanuki Ferreira Silva repeat. You know, Ferreira Silva was playing Uchida and Watanuki was playing Duckworth. Both had really tough opponents, and yeah. And Uchida just lost 6-2, 6-2 to Ferreira Silva, which has to be a bit of a disappointment. I remember predicting that Gunesvaran was going to beat him on last week's episode. So yeah, that didn't pan out.
Yeah, so Uchida, his only semifinal was that Oeiras title. He made, I think, 5 other quarterfinals, though. Mm. But yeah, just for the semi since then. Our other semifinalist was James Duckworth, beating Ochi, Giano, and Ionel, both of them coming from a set down, both of the Romanians there, his fourth challenger semifinal of the season. What did you think of Duckworth this week?
Yeah, he was my pick. That was mostly because, well, even though he lost to Hazawa and Mukund in previous weeks, the draw was pretty nice for him. Of course, usually he's a player that, you know, has more quality than the rest of the field here. And I can't really be angry about how it turned out. I didn't know that Yokkaichi was going to be this fast. Like, he just was very much struggling, you know, for just trying to get to balls that Watanuki threw at him. It was a bit of a rough one for him because there was a lot of scrambling around the court. And, you know, that perhaps that's actually something he isn't that bad at. But, you know, still, it was really Watanuki who had the upper hand in this one, and yeah, won it very deserved to win, definitely. So that's why we ended the week as, you know, without any points, even though I had two semifinalists and you had one.
Yeah, my pick in Yokkaichi, Mark Pomans, didn't make it into the main draw, unfortunately.
But he retired, right?
Yeah, retired after 8 games against Saito. So in the winners competition, I can only tie now, only if I get both of the champions in my Enmas Pulamas, and you get nobody. Over in the doubles, Su and Shimizu won their first challenger title together after 2 previous ITF titles. They defeated Imamura and Noguchi. Right, we go to match of the week, upset of the week. Where would you like to start?
I'm looking at the upsets, but I don't know. I see that the highest scores for like the bookies are probably Zekic over Lajovic. I mean, Lajovic has been a little pretty consistent when he actually played the Challenger Tour this year. But then again, I don't really buy it. And also Sachko over Mahac, yeah, not really. So I think I'm going to have to go for Otegui. And probably Otegui beating Dekamps rather than Fikovic, although both, I could really name both here. I don't think that either is. I think either was very unexpected. I considered Fikovic and Dekams both as players who could actually have a deep run here. And yeah, and even if after one of these matches, I could think that maybe Otegui is actually gonna do something on hard courts. Maybe he can actually play, and then Andreozzi loses two games against him. So yeah, I think for both Fikovic and Dekams, these were very disappointing losses. And yeah, I see that a high score is also lock over Rodríguez Taverna, but on hard courts, that's just plain stupid to me. So yeah, definitely Otegui. Yeah, just choose a match. Either Dekams or Fikovic.
Yeah, I'm going to take Sachko over Makhach as my
Okay.
episode of the week. For Sachko, his best win by far this season, I think. I'm looking at it. He beat Müller and Lille. He beat Zizou Berg in Australian Open qualifying, but I feel like this was the best one by far. For Makhach, he got what he needed, of course, but still a disappointing performance just to win seven games against Sachko. When Sachko's been playing like with the level that he's been playing this season. Match of the week, who do you have?
Yeah, maybe I'm gonna go with Vucevic over Tervalia. Yeah, had a lot of fun watching this one. Stefano ended up coming up short, but I hope that next year he can actually, return to his best. I think he's got a good chance of doing it if he stays healthy. Definitely has been playing at a slightly better level in the past couple of weeks than even his results would suggest. Just running into some tough opponents like Mahac in Bratislava, of course, in the second round here, Fucsovics, Kukushkin in round one. And theoretically, this isn't his best surface, although I think, I think his clay sort of the dominance of clay in his results is probably more about his scheduling than actually not being able to play on other surfaces. But yeah, just hoping that next year will be much smoother for him and that he's gonna return to where he was, because he's certainly a very fun player. And yeah, Fucsovics Travaglia did not, it has the feel of an ATP tour match, right? The both guys were still there just a year ago, but have had tough seasons. Of course, Fucsovics has returned to the top 100, and Travaglia is at 312.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for Travaglia now out of the top 300. But yeah, I also hope that he keeps trying, keeps fighting, because he's shown us in these recent weeks, shown us in Bratislava as well, that he can still play for sure. I went with Riedi over Gaston in their first round match. I thought it was an interesting one. Riedi closing it out in two tie breaks, saving, I think, four set points, 5-6 down in the second set on serve. I think he was 15-40 down. It was a long deuce game. But yeah, got through that, got through the tiebreaker as well. Gaston, I don't think he played quite his best or anything, but I think an impressive win for Riedi. And we can go over to our predictions. We have Maya, we have Maspalomas closing out on these two clay events to finish the season. Let's start in Maya, where we have Nuno Borges as a top seed playing a qualifier. Could face Oleksiy Krutich in the second round, which would be pretty interesting in Krutich's current form. Krutich plays Pedro Sousa first. Also in the section, Bonadio plays Alvarez Varona, and the winner could face Fabio Coelho or a qualifier. Blancano plays Nerman Fatic, could then face Vitaly Sachko or Jan Chojinski. Timofey Skatov plays Yonel and then Dominguez or a qualifier. Third section, we have an interesting first round match between Elias Ymer and Luca Van Aas. Winner plays Genesi or a qualifier. Daddeli also in here playing Gakov. Final section, Rodionov plays Daniil Kolář, who's back from his exploits in Asia, which didn't really work out for him. Tough draw as well. Rodionov couldn't face Milojevic or Oliveira. Vukic is here playing Louis Wessels and then one of two qualifiers. In the qualifying, we have Lazarov, Karlovski plays Deshepper, Jevsejev and Istomin face off. Collignon is probably someone who can make an impact if he qualifies. Nordqvist in here as well. Over in the doubles, Borges and Cabral are the top seeds, which is pretty exciting. We also have Cash and Patton, so we could have this meeting of the Titans in the final if they both get there. Some other interesting teams with Javitsky playing with Neukrist, Kubot and Valkov are here as well. Istomin and Karlovsky, I don't know. Back to the singles, who are you picking for the title?
Oh, wow. Artsium Dabrian as well. The Polish, I mean, I think he started playing for Poland like recently, and he's playing Oliveira. I was not expecting to see another Polish flag in there. Anyway, I would love to see that Borges Cabral Kasparov final. I mean, this would be a perfect way to end the season. It wouldn't be exactly the end because, of course, it would be on Saturday, not on Sunday. Although I imagine that would probably be like, yeah, no, depends on the scheduling. If that would be the last doubles challenger match of the season, because, well, they could play the doubles final before the semis or after the semis, of course. Anyway, let's think about it. I do have, as you said, I mean, you can only tie it, and only if you get 2 out of 2, which is unlikely, considering that I think in the past 3 months you gained like 1 or 2 points, but it's possible. But that's the case, right?
Oh my God.
I think that was the case, though, right? I'm not saying.
I got Maria, so we can go. I got, what else I got? I got Stoderan, Okono, Yokohama. I got more than 1 or 2 in the past.
Okay,
3 months.
Yeah, but there was a bit of a streak like that where I gained like 10 points and you got 1.
Yeah, there was a considerable dry spell between week 38 and week 44. I broke it. So that's
what I had in mind, basically. I'm just as unlikely to get 2 out of 2. Just to be clear, I'm not saying you are more unlikely. And you know, this gives me the chance to go for some peaks that are maybe a little crazier. Last year I was so, you know, down by so many points by the time we hit the last week that I was actually picking like Calvin Emery. I don't really see any fun picks in Maya, honestly. Like, I'm not really sure what to go for, because I don't see any. Like, I know I've picked Ricardo Bonadio a few times, but he's playing Alvarez Varona in the opening round, and I don't like that. I guess if I want to go for something that's maybe not wild at all, but just a little less more exciting than usual, I'm gonna go with Timofey Skatov. Why not? I'm not sure if the indoor conditions in Maya will suit him that much. He hasn't played that well in recent weeks as well. Lost to Andreev in the opening round in Valencia, which is not a bad loss. But, you know, I don't want to go Nuno Borges, because that's probably what I would end up with if I was speaking like ultra seriously. I want to do something like slightly weaker, but still with a good chance of winning. And I think Timofey Skatov, if he comes through that pretty tough opening round against Yonel, who I think is coming from Asia, so could be a bit tired. I think Timofey Skatov has a very serious chance of going deep in this event, because I just like his quarter. Hoinski could be good, and in these conditions, I think indoor hard courts, indoor clay courts, that's how they finished the final in Rio, I think. I mean, the tournament that he won, and then they went over to Rio, I think, to finish it. But it was just 2 games, so it wasn't much of a clay indoor event. So yeah, I'm picking Skatov.
All right, Skatov is fine. I wasn't really going to pick Skatov. I'm looking, you know, Jeffrey Blancano, obviously defending champion, did very well here last season, beating Borges and Tseng back to back. Elias Imer could be interesting. He's decent on clay courts, but hasn't played for a month, and only played on indoor hard before that. So despite his last week being a bit disappointing, I will go with Nuno Borges. I think it was second round to Pellegrino. He made the semis here last time, only lost to Blancano. His draw, I don't love it, but he should be the best player in here. So yeah, Borges, here we go.
Yeah, I think that's what you need to do. Like, if you want to have a chance at tying, I think you need to go Borges here. Yeah.
Yeah. And we go over to Maspalomas. We have Dusan Lajovic as the top seed, plays a qualifier, and then Robin Haase, or another qualifier. Aden Andreev is also in a section, as well as Iñaki Cabrera Bello, Dragos Nicolaides as well. Shevchenko is here playing Mauro Canas. Could then play Pablo Yamas Ruiz or Daniel Michalski. Zekic is here playing Neumayer. Could play Durasovic or Justino then. Kopshiva plays Baranko Kostano. Could face Timo Stoder or Kolofar. Svrčina is here after giving a walkover last week. Plays Hetz. And then Sanchez Izquierdo or Roca Bataya. Hanfman is here playing Lavagno. He then faces or could face Vachero or Steven Diaz. Copian's here as well, facing Tito Andogue, and then one of two qualifiers. In the qualifying, we have Molaker, Chepeliev, Eshargi, Gianmarco Moroni. I don't know, a couple of names there. In the doubles, we have the Sabanov brothers as the top seeds, facing Durasovic and Hertz. Kopshiva plays, but not with Pospisil, with Svrčina this time around. We also have Evan King and Rui Stolder. Niklas Salminen, oh, that's interesting. Durasovic and Niklas Salminen are both here, but they are not playing together. Niklas Salminen is playing with Stevens. Bortolotti and Matos Gordon is here as well. Back to singles though, who are you picking for the title?
That's a stupid decision for Durasovic, because as we've established by now, he needs to play with a Finn to win titles in doubles. Yeah, maybe he should try some other Finns, but I don't know. Erovasa has been playing some Challengers lately. Anyway, I do have to mention Timo Stoder, even though I don't think I'm picking him. But since the beginning of October, he went on a fantastic run in ITFs, 23-4, made 5 finals, won 2 titles, only lost to Michalski, Mauro Canas, Weiss, and Kuzuhara. So basically no bad losses in there. Was on a 14-match win streak at some point. I am thinking sort of about picking him, but that's too much, I think. I don't want to give you that much of a chance to tie it, because I don't think Timo Stoder is winning this event. I just don't think it's that possible in this section. Maybe if he was in some other one, I would consider it. I don't know. Of course, I could also just snap pick Daniel Michalski. It's possible that it would be a good choice for me, because, you know, I would have fun with it, but I don't know. I just don't think so. He lost to Moroni like pretty tamely last week. And even though this is his last chance for Australian Open qualifying, I'm not a big fan of the draw, that's for sure. Yamas Ruiz and then Shevchenko or Mauro Canas potentially. So I don't think we'll be seeing Australian Open him in Australian Open qualifying, probably. I think he might have missed his chance. Although we'll be rooting for him to do it. Kopejans playing Drogę, maybe Kopejans is an option. I think he used to play pretty well in like these end of season clay challengers. Kopshiva, but I am going with Shevchenko. It's not too off the board. Maybe you were about to pick him, I don't know. But I, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you probably know that I am a big Alexander Shevchenko fan. That's just gonna, I'm gonna have fun with this pick, and that's why I'm going for it. And he's probably one of the best players in the draw.
Yeah, I just have to go back to the doubles for a second. I completely miss David Vega. Hernandez is here, playing alongside Baran Cocosano. Vega Hernandez, obviously number 31 now in doubles, 4 ATP titles, 3 challenger titles that he's had, most of them alongside Rafael Matos. So he's going to be interesting, sort of coming back down to the challengers after a long while. I don't think he's played one since Bordeaux in May.
And they're not even seeded, because Baranko Kosano is at 594 in doubles. Pretty wild.
Over in the singles, who am I picking here to save me? I'm a little bit tempted by Hanfman, although he did spend... Yeah, because he was nominated for Davis Cup, so he was preparing on indoor hard court. But actually, they went up pretty early, didn't they? So this might be an interesting...
Yeah, they lost to Canada first match, I think.
Yeah, I'm talking myself into it. There's nobody else that really stands out to me very much. Lajović, after his lost last week. I don't really want to pick him here. So yeah, Yannick Hanfmann. Let's go with him.
Yeah, so if Hanfmann and Borges win their respective titles this week, Jakub is going to tie me in the competition. If not, then I win. If Shevchenko and Skatov win, then I'm going to be 4 points up. But yeah, that's probably not possible. But still, it's been a fun closer race than last year. We'll see how it ends next time. And next time we're going to be back with a pretty short episode that's just going to contain us talking about Maspalomas and Maya. Then you can expect some, season review content in during the time where we won't have the ATP Challenger Tour, which is a very sad month for all Challenger fans. Maybe some ITF events will be streamed. We'll see. Perhaps there's some league competitions, but otherwise it's going to be a pretty dry run of professional tennis. Yeah, but it will end very soon, and soon you're going to have more challenger events than ever, of course, because in 2023 there are apparently 195 of them coming if what the ATP said holds up. Anyway, thanks for this week. Yeah, and see ya when we talk about Maspalomas and Maya.
Bye.